You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to today's reading of Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for December 8th. I'm Zachariah Osmond from Drake University, and here's our first story. School Board OKs New High School Classes for 2024-2025 School Year by Scott Stewart. The Council Bluffs Community School District is adding several new high school classes next school year. School board members voted at a recent meeting to adopt the 2024/2025 High School Program of Studies, which included approval for the new classes. Council Bluffs high schoolers will be able to enroll in Introduction to Business, Introduction to Media Production, Foundations of Education, Introduction of Early Childhood Education and Biology and Physics with Lab, all of which are concurrent enrollment courses where students can earn college credit with a satisfactory grade. Advanced Placement Physics with Lab 2 has also been added along with Guitar 2 according to the program studies. Two concurrent enrollment classes, Anatomy and Physiology for Allied Health programs and Technical Math 2, dropped along with fashion and introduction to sewing. The Terrace to Honor Council Bluffs Mayor with Named Cocktail by Scott Stewart. The Terrace will celebrate the holiday season with an upcoming market while naming a signature drink after Council Bluffs Mayor Matt Walsh. The holiday market runs Wednesday, December 16th from 5 to 8 p.m. Social Enterprise Cafe at 4201 Rivers Edge Parkway. It's 4201 Rivers Edge Parkway. The mayor, Matt Fashion, will be officially unveiled at 5:30 p.m. The market will feature seasonal goods and crafts. Whether you're looking for the perfect gift, enjoying delicious treats, or raising a toast to the season with the mayor, Matt Fashion, this event promises to be a joyful experience for all, the cafe said in a news release. Profits from the Terrace support the mission of Trivium Life Services. Epley comes full circle in Return to Vision Care Clinic by David Bulbitz. When optometrist Robin Epley announced that she was ready to return to Vision Care Clinic, the eye care provider welcomed her not only with open arms, but a new office as well. "It's like my birthday and Christmas for the next 10 years all at the same time," Epley said at a ribbon-cutting ceremony for her office at the corner of 2nd Avenue and South Street, just west of Broadway and Council Bluffs. Optometrist Robin Epley, on the right, holding scissors, gets ready to cut the ribbon for her new Vision Care Clinic office at 200 South 29th Street in Council Bluffs on Thursday, November 30th, 2023. Epley had briefly worked for a vision care clinic when she and her husband Cole first moved to Council Bluffs in 2013. When her main practice hired her on full time, she wasn't able to fill in that vision care anymore. Epley decided to leave that practice in 2022. She was unable to work in Council Bluffs for 1 year due to a non-complete clause, so she filled in at other vision care clinic locations until she could return. In anticipation of her return, the renovation of the property at 200 South 29th Street began on June 1st with a goal of having the space ready for Epley by October 2nd, Menlich said. "It's been a pleasure to get her to this point," Menlich said. "Now it's time for me to back out and let her do her thing." The location might be familiar to a number of Council Bluffs residents who like Mayor Matt Walsh, who used to get his teeth cleaned there. "This is my former dental clinic, so I feel right at home," Walsh said. Epley also happens to be Walsh's eye doctor. "For a year, I've been saying, when will you be able to get back to work in Council Bluffs? When?" Walsh said. "We're glad to have you back in business. I will be calling for an appointment." The building also looks familiar to film nerds. It was used as a set for an abortion clinic in Omaha. Native Alexander Payne's 1996 director debut, Citizen Ruth. Epley's thrilled to be back with Vision Care Clinic to have a brand new office. "It feels like it's full circle," Epley said. "For me to start working with Vision Care Clinic when I first moved to town and now coming back, it's just a wondering group of people, wonderful doctors, staff. It's a great group to be a part of. I'm very thankful that they welcomed me back." Epley is originally from South Dakota. She received her bachelor's degree from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln and graduated summa cum laude from the University of Southern College of Optometry in Memphis. She and her husband, a native of Walnut, decided off after school to return to the Midwest and made Council Bluffs their home. Council Bluffs is very special to me, Epley said. When we had a job opportunity after school to come back to Iowa, we both knew we wanted to live in the Midwest, and Council Bluffs has just become our hometown, and we're very proud of Council Bluffs, and we're very happy to be here. I'm happy to be back in town. Riverside, East Buchanan, Wapello, Akron, Westfield, North Cedar, and Newman Catholic compete in Palm Class IV at State Dance, 11/30/23. Mason City and Newman Catholic are first place honors, and North Cedar and Akron Westfield also took home trophies for top four finishes in Class IV Palm on Thursday, November 30th, 2023 at the Iowa State Dance and Drill Team Association Championship at Hy-Vee Hall in Des Moines. Riverside, East Buchanan, and Wapello also competed in the 10th team division. Newman Catholic received 353.5 points out of 400 in the first four judge panel, followed in the top four by Mount Ayer, North Cedar, and Akron Westfield, which scored 346 for Mount Ayer, 344 for North Cedar, and 341.5 for Akron Westfield out of 400. Riverside placed 6th with 340 points. East Buchanan was 8th with 327.5, and Wapello 9th with 313. Keep checking back for more photo galleries from the 3-day event, and be sure to see these that already are online. DeSantis continues attack on Haley in Cedar Rapids style. Cedar Rapids, fresh off of the debate stage in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis continued his attacks on Republican presidential primary rival Nikki Haley on Thursday in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Remarkably, in his debate last week with Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom on Fox News, DeSantis told a standing room only crowd packed into a small Cedar Rapids sports bar, "I need to practice debating somebody who is almost as liberal as Nikki Haley." Haley, former South Carolina governor and United Nations ambassador, is now only second behind former President Donald Trump in the early voting states of New Hampshire and her home state of South Carolina, and is battling DeSantis for second in Iowa, where the Florida governor has pinned his hopes. General. Speaking at the Union Station Sports Bar and Grill in Cedar Rapids for a meet-and-greet event hosted by Never Back Down, the Super PAC supporting his presidential campaign, DeSantis continued his criticism of Haley's stance on gender-affirming surgeries for minors bathroom access for transgender people. The pair traded barbs during Wednesday's GOP presidential primary debate over their past positions on the topics, with both candidates launching accusations against one another on the issue. DeSantis claimed Haley killed, in quotes, a bill during her term as governor of South Carolina that would have prevented biological males from using female restrooms. Haley, during the debate, accused DeSantis of lying about the law. Haley said she believed she, while she was governor, that there wasn't a need to bring government into the situation and insisted that boys should go into the boys' bathroom and girls into the girls' bathroom. Recognizing that the issue has exploded from what was during her tenure as governor, Haley said she believed at the time that anyone who had an issue with that policy should use a private bathroom. In quotes, "What I always said is boys go into boys' bathroom, girls go into girls," end quote. She said, adding that transgender girls playing sports is the woman's issue of our time. Haley clapped back at DeSantis, arguing when he was running for governor and they asked him about the issue, he said he didn't think bathroom bills were a good use of his time. DeSantis, though, ultimately signed into law measure in May that prevents transgender people from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity in public schools, universities, and government buildings and prisons. "I actually got it done," end quotes, DeSantis told the crowd of Cedar Rapids. "I protected the girls. You, Haley, didn't. I stood up. You, Nikki Haley, caved. That's just the reality of the situation." End quotes. DeSantis also bashed Haley over her position on banning gender-affirming surgeries for minors. He touted a law he signed that prohibits the prescription of puberty-blocking hormone and hormone antagonist therapies to treat gender dysphoria in minors. He also bans gender-affirming medical procedures on surgeries for those younger than 18. She opposes that bill, end quotes, DeSantis said during the debate of Haley. End quotes. When can't we, as Republicans, agree that it's wrong to chop off the private parts of a 14-year-old kid? What is going on in this party that we can't just have everyone say that's wrong, DeSantis said in Cedar Rapids. So in Florida, we stood up against it. We said it's wrong with the idea that somehow that the parents' choice do not have the right to abuse their kids, he said to applause. Haley said DeSantis is lying about record. I said that if you have to be 18 to get a tattoo, you should have to be 18 to have anything done to change your gender, Haley said to applause from the audience. Haley also said the Florida parental right in education law, which DeSantis championed and signed into law last year, does not go far enough. That law bars instruction on sexual orientation and gender identity in kindergarten through third grade. Candidate can't cave, DeSantis says. The attacks come as DeSantis tries to persuade GOP influencers and donors that he is the sole candidate to reclaim the White House. Haley has attracted support from big donors and Americans for Prosperity, the political arm of influential conservative network led by billionaire Charles Koch. AFP Action, in its endorsement, promised to commit its nationwide coalition of activists to help Haley defeat Trump in the GOP primary contest. We can't have a typical establishment politician that will have just to cave these people. Cave to the left, cave to the media, cave when things get tough, DeSantis said in Cedar Rapids. And if there's anybody running that show that he's willing to stand strong and fight for you, I'm the guy that's done that, DeSantis said. While having been endorsed by influential Republicans in the first in the nation GOP caucus state, including Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and Christian conservative leader Bob Vanderplas, president and CEO of the Family Leader. In recent weeks, DeSantis' campaign has been plagued by infighting and dysfunction and remains far behind Trump in recent polling of the state's likely caucus of governors. How can he catch Trump? Asked what he needs to do differently in the weeks leading up to the caucuses to eat into Trump's lead, DeSantis said he's confident influential endorsements in the state such as Reynolds and dedicating significant time, personnel, and financial resources to lead off nominating state will come to fruition over the next 39 to 40 days, end quotes. He said tens of thousands of Iowans have committed a caucus for him across the state, and we're adding more every day, he said. We're excited about the progress we have, DeSantis said, playing the game to turn people out for a caucus. We've got a lot of great supporters, we're getting more every day, and we're going to continue doing that. We're going to get the job done, end quote. DeSantis last week completed a tour of all Iowa's 99 counties. The visits have been part of an all-in strategy in Iowa, as he hopes an upset caucus win can help catapult him into a dominant position in the GOP primary race and show the country that former President Donald Trump's nomination is not inevitable. I think that Iowa has an opportunity to really change the trajectory of this country, DeSantis told the crowd in Cedar Rapids. I ask you to talk to your friends and your families and neighbors, co-workers. Let them know that showing up to that caucus is going to be very meaningful on January 15th. DeSantis has been amping up his attacks on the former president's electability as Trump faces criminal indictments, including charges related to efforts to overturn the 2020 election. In quotes, I think what you saw on the stage last night was, I'm the person that can bring change to D.C., he said. I'm fighting for the American people. I'm not worried about these liberal donors on Wall Street that have gravitated to Nikki Haley. Obviously, I'm not running for any type of personal vendetta. It's about the American people's issues, and it's about getting things done for the country. The DeSantis campaign this week began airing ads showcasing Iowa voters who voted for Trump in the past and so are supporting DeSantis in 2024. The ad highlights voter support for DeSantis' proposed border and economic policy and feature clips of bills signed by the Florida governor. Voters react. Carla Behrens, 59, of Marion, is a former Trump supporter who says she plans to caucus for DeSantis. In quotes, I think Trump did good for when he was there, but I don't think he's the man for us now, Behrens said. I think he's too hot-headed. He's going in with the big guns, and I don't know if that's right for the right reasons. She added, she's not on board with Trump's recent remarks comparing political opponents to vermin, who he will root out, which historians have compared to language used by dictators. Barron says she's supporting DeSantis for fighting against COVID-19 restrictions, passing universal school choice legislation, and banning gender-affirming medical procedures and surgeries for minors. She also supports his promise to declare the nation's southern border a national emergency on day one, mobilizing the U.S. military and continuing construction of a wall to secure the U.S.-Mexico border. Other attendees remain undecided. Casey Cords, the 44 of Marion, said he tends to favor Trump's policies and experience in the White House, but also likes DeSantis' youth and believes he is less divisive and may be more electable, affecting the argument DeSantis has been making on the campaign trail. End quotes. Looks like the slam dunk, Trump looks like the slam dunk candidate. Is that going to come for petition? I don't know, Cord said. More and more keeps getting piled on him. Just or not, I don't know. But we need to do an electable candidate, and that's why I'm here. Rain, snow, and plunging temperatures in Iowa this weekend. Get all the details here by Matt Holler. Friday will be unseasonably warm across the state, but with two cold fronts moving over this weekend, things are about to change in a big way. Track the rain, see how much snow is expected, and find out how cold it will get in our latest forecast video. Capital Notebook. New York Times responds to Iowa AG Brenna Byrd over allegations of Hamas ties. New York Times responded to a letter from Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd questioning whether freelance journalists who worked with the organization had ties to Hamas. In a letter on Wednesday, the Times Director of Communications, Charlie Stadlener, called the claims, end quote, inflammatory allegations based on false assumptions and debunked social media posts. On Monday, Byrd and 13 other attorneys general sent a letter to the Times, Associated Press, Reuters, and CNN, arguing the news organizations may have provided material support to terrorists by paying for photographs from journalists that had been alleged to have ties with Hamas. The attorneys general cited for honest reporting pro-Israel media watchdogs, which questioned whether freelance photojournalists for the organization had advanced knowledge of the October 7th attack on Israel. Times has denied it had any knowledge of the October 7th attack. Stadlener reiterated in the letter that the only connection the New York Times has to Hamas is that we report our organization fearlessly and at times at great risk. He pointed to latest statements from Honest Reporting, which said it did not have evidence that any journalist was embedded with Hamas and was satisfied with the explanations from the media outlets. I realize that the purveyors of disinformation online have widely and recklessly spread the lie of embedded journalists, Stadlener wrote. But it does real harm when public officials embrace such falsehoods and give them credibility. Iowa's Secretary of State to conduct youth straw poll. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Peet announced Thursday that the annual Iowa Youth Straw Poll will be held on January 9, 2024. The Iowa Youth Straw Poll invites Iowa students to learn about the civic process by participating in a mock election caucus. This year, straw poll participants will cast their vote for candidates for U.S. president. Programs like the Iowa Youth Straw Poll not only give these students an opportunity to make their voices heard, but they get a firsthand understanding of how elections work, so they're better prepared to vote in elections once they're eligible. Pate said in a press release, the straw poll is part of the election one-on-one curriculum provided by Pate's office for schools to use. Dozens of Iowa schools have already signed up to participate in the straw poll, according to Pate's office. Pate's office will live stream the results of the straw poll on January 9th, 2024. Las Vegas shooter was a former professor in Iowa who applied for a job at UNLV, source says. The suspect in a shooting that killed three people at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas on Wednesday was a professor who taught at the University of Northern Iowa from 1999 to 2001. The Associated Press has identified the suspect as Anthony Polito. The 67-year-old man is suspected of fatally shooting three people and wounding another. He is a professor who unsuccessfully sought a job at the school. A law enforcement official with direct knowledge of the investigation told the Associated Press. He was killed in a shootout with law enforcement officers at Beam Hall at the Lee School of Business. Clark County Sheriff Kevin McKay. So my name has not been released by the Metropolitan Police Department, UNLV, or the Clark County Coroner's Office. According to his LinkedIn profile, Polito's longest academic position was at East Carolina University at Greenville, North Carolina, where he served as a professor from 2001 to 2017, which is a 16-year span, as well as an earlier stint in the early 1990s. Prior to East Carolina, he taught at the University of Northern Iowa at Cedar Falls from 1999 to 2001, and at the Terry College of Business at the University of Georgia in the 1990s. On Wednesday, terrified students, a professor cowered in classrooms and dorms as a gunman roamed the floors of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas building, killing three people and critically wounding a fourth before dying in a shootout with the police. Investigators searched an apartment in Henderson, Nevada, late Wednesday as part of an investigation and retrieved several electronic devices, including Polito's cell phone. The official said the official was not authorized to discuss details of the investigation and spoke to AP on condition of anonymity. The attack terrified a city that experienced the deadliest shooting in modern U.S. history in October 2017, when a gunman killed 60 people and wounded more than 400 after opening fire from a window at Mandalay Bay Casino on Las Vegas Strip, a couple of miles from UNLV campus. Lessons learned from that shooting helped authorities to work seamlessly in reacting to UNLV attacks, Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Sheriff Kevin McKillen said at a news conference. The gunman opened fire about 11:45 a.m. Wednesday on the fourth floor of the building that houses UNLV's Lee Business School, and then went to several other floors before he was killed in a shootout with two university police detectives outside the building, UNLV Police Chief Adam Garcia said. Authorities gave all clear about 40 minutes after the first report of an active shooter. It wasn't immediately clear how many of the school, 30,000 students were on campus at the time. When McKill had said students had been gathered outside the building to eat and play games. If police hadn't killed the attacker, it could have been countless additional lives taken, he said. No student should have to fear pursuing their dreams on a college campus, the sheriff said. Police didn't immediately identify the victims or the attacker's motive. They also didn't say what kind of weapon was used, although some witnesses report hearing as many as 20 shots fired. UNLV professor Kevani Martin took cover under a desk in a classroom where another faculty member and three students took shelter with her. It was terrifying. I can't even begin to explain, Martin said. I was trying to hold it together for my students and trying not to cry, but the emotions are something I never want to experience again. Martin said she was texting friends and loved ones, hoping to receive word a suspect had been detained when another professor came to the room and told everyone to evacuate. They joined dozens of others rushing out of the building. Martin had her students pile into her car and drove them off campus. Once we got away from UNLV, we parked and sat in silence. She said nobody said a word. We were in utter shock. Selena Guevara said she had a phone call from her daughter, Marky Montoya, who was in class in the building and heard gunshots, screaming and yelling, but wasn't hurt. She's hysterical, telling me, I love you, and so scared, Guevara said. Another student, Jordan Eckerman, 25, said he was in his business law class in his second floor classroom when he heard a loud bang and piercing alarm went off, sending students to their feet. Some ran from the room panicked while others headed to the professor's instructions to stay calm, Eckerman said. He walked out, locked eyes with law enforcement officer in bulletproof vest holding a long gun. Clothing, backpacks, and water bottles lay scattered on the floor. Eckerman said he mouthed to the officer, where do I go? The officer pointed to an exit. Minutes later, when he was outside, Eckerman said he heard bursts of gunshots totaling at least 20 rounds. The air smelled of gunpowder. He said he kept walking away from campus, even though he didn't know where to go. Classes were canceled through Friday at the university, and a UNLV's basketball game at the University of Dayton, Ohio was canceled Wednesday night because of the shootings. So far in Northwest Iowa is one of a kind. Sioux City. Tyler McDonald keeps his eyes open for any unusual items when unloading rock onto buildings during roofing jobs. Little did the Sanborn, Iowa roofer know he made not only unusual, but a one-of-a-kind discovery when he fished an odd-looking item from the rocks during a job back in 2015. I picked it up and I looked at it a little. It looked like a bone, McDonald said. I just wanted to know what it was from. He just found three fused vertebrae at nearly 1 inch long. The fossil isn't that big, but his discovery is a pretty big deal. Vertebrae come from a mosasaur, a prehistoric marine reptile, and until McDonald's sharp eyes spotted them, the mosasaur fossil had never been discovered in Iowa. I didn't expect to see something like that, McDonald said. His discovery eventually was brought to the attention of Morningside College Associate Anatomy Professor Kurt Spearing, whose research during the past 2 years determined the fossils indeed from a mosasaur. In October, he presented his findings at the annual meeting of the Geological Society of America. If my assertion is correct, that this is the first mosasaur discovered in Iowa, that would be significant in itself, said Sparing, whose research focuses paleontology. Thus far, no one has challenged his claim, decreasing the probability that the fossil quarried from a gravel pit near Ashen in Osceola County is the first evidence of mosasaurs found in Iowa. It makes sense, given Northwest Iowa was on the edge of a large inland sea millions of years ago. Anything you can drag scientific knowledge forward takes a step. Anytime you can drag scientific knowledge forward a few steps, you've got to consider that a win, Sparing said. McDonald was referred to by Sparing by one of the professor's colleagues in North Dakota when he first saw the fossil in 2021. It was obvious they were vertebrae. Doing comparisons, he quickly determined that likely were from a mosasaur, a large marine reptile that lived 65 million, 90 million years ago. Sparing compared the fossil with those in other museum collections and shared photos in a 3D scan of the fossil with other experts who agreed he had the fossilized tail vertebrae belonging to two species of mosasaur. A creature whose fossils have been found in Nebraska, North Dakota, and other Midwest states and around the world. Not a dinosaur, a mosasaur instead into a marine reptile. Sparing said looked like a lizard with long skull and flippers instead of legs. It was considered an apex predator that would have eaten anything smaller than itself. Sparing said the first appearance of a fossil in a geographic area is always interesting, and it's even more so when considering fossils aren't found in a mountainous area because the rock around here was not as conductive to creating fossils. The mosasaur vertebrae had been donated to the University of Iowa Paleontology Repository and is on loan to Sparing for a year while he continues his research. Sparing said it's unlikely he'll be able to determine which species of mosasaur the fossil came from, but its round edges have some experts thinking it could have gone through other animals' digestive systems, theorizing the tail could have been bitten off and eaten by another prehistoric predator. Sediment could be scratched away from the fossil and analyzed to determine what type of rock it came from. There's almost always something you can try to find out, Sparing said. As he continues his research, Sparing is writing a research article, further making the claim it's the first mosasaur found in Iowa. It's a spectacular kind, he said. He made even more amazing by the unlikely circumstances of his discovery among a pile of rocks. It shows there's been another world beneath our feet just waiting to be found. There could be a complete mosasaur skull 50 feet beneath us, but unless it washes out, we'll never know, Sparing said. It makes one want to take a closer look at the rock in the backyard landscaping. Listening to Council Bluffs Daily Non-Perio for December 8th, 2023 on Irish. The Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Zachariah Osmond from Drake University. Irish volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any Irish program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. That's 515-243-6833. Thank you. Today, we have the obituaries. Helen Rose Blakely, Wilma Mott Crawford, Corwin Gray, Council Bluffs, Iowa, Judith K. Lee, Robert P. McCampbell, Jr., Karen Cron Mesley, Council Bluffs, Iowa, Edna Meyer, Council Bluffs, Iowa, Lyle J. Rodenberg, Delilah A. Clodstrom, Joanne F. Proctor, Dylan Ruby, Helen E. Sosa, Phyllis Brennan. And for now, we have sports. Gilbert leads the way for Iowa State, beating in-state rival Iowa 90-65 for the 600th Hilton Coliseum win. Sean Gilbert scored 25 points and Robert Jones scored 18 points, and Iowa State beat Iowa 90-65 as the Cyclones celebrated the program's 600th win at Hilton Coliseum, Ames, Iowa. Kashawn Gilbert scored 25 points and Robert Jones scored 18 points, and Iowa State beat Iowa 90-65 Thursday night as the Cyclones celebrated the program's 600th win at Hilton Coliseum. Iowa State is 600-207 at Hilton Coliseum, which opened in December 2nd of 1971. Thursday's win also was the largest point differential between the two teams in the 76 games played between the rivals. Iowa State beat Iowa 73-53 in 2021, the largest differential prior to Thursday. The Hawkeyes still lead the all-time series 47-29. Jones finished 6-for-6 shooting, and his only miss of the night occurred at the foul line, where he was 6-for-10. Trey King scored 17 points, shooting 8-for-11, and Tamon Lipsky 11 for Iowa State, 7-for-2, which shot 53%, 32-for-60. Payne Sandorf scored 14 points in reserves. DeSante Bowen and Owen Freeman scored 13 points and 11 points, respectively, for the Cyclones. Sandorf's three-pointer brought Iowa then 16-12 with 12:26 before halftime before the Cyclones scored the next 6 points. Brent Craig's layup almost 2 minutes later would mark the last time Iowa trailed by single digits. King followed with a layup. Jackson Pavoski made a pair of foul shots and the Cyclones outscored Iowa 25-15 in the last 10 minutes before halftime for a 47-29 lead. Iowa State started the second half with a 15-5 run, extended margin at 62-35, 3.5 minutes in. The Cyclones made it 70-41 when Joe made a jump shot with 12 minutes and 46 seconds left. Iowa, 5-4, 0-1 in the Big Ten, resumes conference play when they host Michigan on Sunday. Iowa State hosts Prairie View AM on Sunday. Duke football names Manny Diaz as head coach. Manny Diaz will be introduced Saturday as Duke's new football head coach, the 23rd in school history. Diaz replaces Mike Elko, who departed to become the head coach at Texas A&M after guiding Duke to a 16-9 record in 2 seasons in Durham, North Carolina. "We are grateful and humbled for this opportunity and could not be more excited to be the head football coach at Duke University," Diaz said, praising campus leaders for their true commitment to the program. "Duke University is an elite institution in every facet, and we're excited to be a part of it. I'm beyond excited to get to work," he said. Diaz, who is 49 years old, completed a 21-15 record as head coach of Miami from 2019 to 2021, both fired following the 2021 season. He joined James Franklin's staff at Penn State as a defensive coordinator and linebackers coach in 2022, and the Nittany Lion ranks tips in the national defense 223 yards per game, and third in scoring defenses this season, 11.4 points per game. Diaz was a defensive coordinator in Miami from 2016 to 2018, Mississippi State from 2010 and 2015, Louisiana Tech in 2014, Texas from 2011 to 2013, and Middle Tennessee from 2016 to 2000. "He's an experienced coach with a strong track record of success, deep knowledge of the ACC, and exciting vision for the future of our program," Duke President Vincent E. Price said. "I'm confident our student-athletes will continue to achieve tremendous success on the field and in the classroom under his leadership." The Blue Devils, 7-5, 4-4 in the ACC, are scheduled to face Troy, 11-2, in the Sun Belt Conference in the Birmingham Bowl on December 23rd. Associate head coach and running backs coach Trooper Taylor is serving as interim coach for them. Hitchcock Experience, 100-mile race taking place at Hitchcock Nature Center this weekend. Endurance riders will soon descend upon Iowa's wintry Lowe's Hill for the annual Hitchcock Experience Half Marathon. 50-mile, 101K, and 100-mile race held every December at Hitchcock Nature Center. Runners will utilize the entire trail system, including 4 miles of new trails that opened to the public earlier this year. The Hitchcock Experience is presented by the Greater Omaha Area Trail Runners, GOATS, a longtime partner of the park that donates a portion of race proceeds to support improvements at Hitchcock Nature Center. Trails and facilities will remain open to the public for the duration of this event. Although visitors should expect the park to be busy with limited parkings, visitors are welcome to cheer participants on as they cross the finish line or tackle another hill during this experience that tests runners' mental and physical fortitude. Pottawatomie County Conservation asks that anyone enjoy the park's trails during the event give approaching runners the right of way by moving to the side. When is it? Saturday, December 9th to Sunday, December 10th. Where? Hitchcock Nature Center, Lowe's Hill at 27792 Ski Hill Loop, Honey Creek, Iowa. Who? Ron Russ, Race Director, Greater Omaha Trail Runners. Week 14 NFL Capsules. Week 14 NFL Capsules. Jacksonville Jaguars 8-4 at Cleveland Browns 7-5. Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski said the team is preparing for both Trevor Lawrence's ankle and CJ Beathard to play for the Jaguars. Lawrence limped through practice Thursday, but has a high ankle sprain, and his mobility will be minimal if he tries to play 6 days after being injured and the Jaguars lost the Bengals. The Browns have allowed the fewest yards per game in the NFL at 260.5, and pass rusher Myles Garrett and cornerback Denzel Ward are both playing with shoulder alignments. It'll likely be Joe Flacco shouldering the load for the Browns at quarterback. He is 1-9 in his past 10 starts, but had the Browns driving to take the lead when he threw an interception in Cleveland's loss at the Rams this week. Detroit Lions, 9-3 at Chicago Bears, 4-8. Urgency is being encouraged up and down the Lions locker room in the rematch with the Bears, who nearly upset Detroit in the first meeting. The Lions scored 2 touchdowns in the final 3 minutes to defeat the Bears 31-26 last month. The Lions subsequently lost to Green Bay and defeated the New Orleans Saints to hold a 3-game lead over the Minnesota Vikings and the Packers in the division with 5 games remaining. They're nipping at the heels of the Eagles and 49ers in the NFC playoff race, but that push would be defeated by another defeat. Balance is becoming the calling card for the Lions, who are 4th in the NFL in rushing and passing. The Bears haven't won back-to-back games since 2021. Carolina Panthers, 1-11, and New Orleans Saints, 5-7. 2 concussions and a rib injury are among the injuries for Saints QB Derek Carr in the past month, and New Orleans Wade during the offense where Jameis Winston took over this week. The Panthers are eliminated from playoff consideration and lost the first meeting of the Saints 20-17 in Week 2. The New Orleans playoff hopes are perilous thanks to 3 consecutive losses. The Saints were in sole possession of first place in the NFC South before losing the Atlanta Falcons 2 weeks ago. To remain in the mix, the Saints are in a must-win spot this week. Carolina swept the Saints in 2022. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 5-7, at Atlanta Falcons, 6-6. Atlanta can accelerate its march toward its first playoff game since 2017 by sweeping Tampa Bay. The Bucs can pull even in the standings with a victory. The Falcons already own a win over the Bucs 16-13 on October 22nd. Who understand the gravity of this NFC South game, the stakes for the rest of the season. The Falcons are 3-0 in division games, but last won the NFC South in their Super Bowl runner-up season in 2016. Quarterback Desmond Ridder is 2-0 against Tampa Bay, beating them in the regular season finale as a rookie and on Young Wei Koo's 51-yard field goal earlier this season. He said the Falcons left meat on the bone in the 3-point win at Tampa this season, a game in which Atlanta didn't have a healthy Bijan Robinson, who was out due to illness. Houston Texans, 7-5, at New York Jets, 4-8. Any faint prayer for the playoffs rests in the hands of the Jets QB, Zach Wilson, who bounced back up from the depth chart from the number 3 on the latest spin of the carousel by head coach Robert Saleh. Houston won for the 4th time in 5 weeks last Sunday, defeating the Denver Broncos 22-17. After facing the Jets, the Texans played 3 division games in the final 4 weeks, including 2 against the last-placed Tennessee Titans. Houston and Indianapolis were tied 1 game behind Jacksonville in the AFC South entering the home stretch. The Texans are firmly in the wild card mix and jumped into the number 7 playoff spot in the AFC thanks to Pittsburgh's loss to New England on Thursday night. Indianapolis Colts, 7-5, at Cincinnati Bengals, 6-6. Pittsburgh's loss Thursday pushed the Colts into the number 16 AFC playoff picture. Cincinnati has pep in his step on the heels of the historic effort from quarterback Jake Browning at Jacksonville, making just his 2nd career start after Joe Burrow's season-ending right wrist injury. Browning completed 32 of 37 passes for 354 yards and a touchdown while also rushing for 22 yards and another score, calmly rallying the Bengals from TD deficits of 7-0, 14-7, and 28-21. The Colts won their 4th consecutive game last week, down in the Titans in overtime, and have the Steelers, Falcons, and Raiders left on the schedule before hosting Houston in Week 18 finale. Los Angeles Rams, 6-6, at Baltimore Ravens, 9-3. The Rams answered a 3-game losing streak with 3 wins in a row, scoring 37 points at Arizona and 36 last week, and beat Cleveland in their highest outputs of the season. Baltimore has only 1 loss in the past 7 games, thriving behind the number 1 rushing attack, 158.6 yards per game, and number 2 defense, 273.2 yards allowed per game. The Ravens lead the NFL with 22 rushing TDs. Baltimore is coming out of the bye week and 12-3 in that situation under coach John Harbaugh. Rookie running back Kyron Williams keys the Rams offense, looking like the missing link in the past 2 games. They accounted for 317 total yards and 3 touchdowns. Rams QB Matthew Stafford has also picked up the pace, throwing 7 touchdowns with just 1 interception in the last 2 games. Minnesota Vikings, 6-6, at Las Vegas Raiders, 5-7. The Vikings welcome back their best offensive player when they visit the Raiders. All-pro wide receiver Justin Jefferson missed the past 7 games because of a hamstring injury that he sustained on October 8th. The 24-year-old was off to a terrific start to the season before it was interrupted by injury. He hauled in 36 catches for 571 yards, 3 touchdowns, and had at least 149 receiving yards in 3 of those 5 games. Interim's Raider head coach Antonio Pierce is 2-2 since taking over for Josh McDaniels, who was fired on October 31st. QB Aiden O'Connell is set to make his 6th start of his rookie campaign. The Purdue product has posted a 76.4 passer rating while completing 63.5% of his passes for 1,000. 194 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. Seattle Seahawks, 6-6, at San Francisco 49ers, 9-3. After a 41-35 loss last Thursday at Dallas, the Seahawks faced the 49ers for the second time in 17 weeks. San Francisco won 31-13 at Lumen Field on Thanksgiving night as Christian McCaffrey rushed for 114 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Seahawks offense got on track against Dallas after entering the game with 20 consecutive possessions without a touchdown. Geno Smith threw for 334 yards and 3 TDs, all to DK Metcalf, and also rushed in for a score. But Seattle's defense allowed 25 or more points for the fourth time in the past 5 games. The 49ers have won 4 consecutive games, one shy of their season high. After starting 5-0, they lost 3 in a row before rebounding following a bye week. Their biggest victory came last Sunday in Philadelphia when they avenged a defeat in last season's NFC Championship game by trouncing the Eagles 42-19, scoring touchdowns on 6 consecutive possessions. QB Brock Purdy's 3-0 in his career against the Seahawks, averaging 31 points against a division rival. Buffalo Bills, 6-6, at Kansas City Chiefs, 8-4. The Bills are making their 5th visit to Kansas City in 34-plus months and sandwiched between playoff disappointments at Arrowhead. Buffalo has won consecutive regular season games at the Raucous Road venue. That's a welcome trend for a team embracing the must-win feel of this game, having lost 4 of its past 6 games before bye last week. If the playoffs began today, the Bills aren't in the postseason picture. For the first time in recent memory, there's some doubt about the Chiefs keeping pace with the Bills, who are 5th in the NFL in scoring at 27.3 points per game. Chiefs suffered losses in 3 of their past 5 games and have multiple key injuries to navigate, including the NFL's 5th leading rusher, Isaiah Pacheco, shoulder, and left tackle Donovan Smith, neck stinger. Last Sunday's 27-19 loss to the host Green Bay Packers marked the 4th time Kansas City scored 21 or fewer points during the 5-game stretch. Patrick Mahomes, who threw for 424 yards in October victory over the Los Angeles Chargers, has been held to 210 or fewer yards in 3 of the past 4 games. Denver Broncos, 6-6, at Los Angeles Chargers, 5-7. Los Angeles has no less than 5 teams to jump over in its season final 5 weeks if it wants to earn an AFC playoff spot. Only the Kansas City Chiefs have a winning record among the Chargers' final opponents. They have 2 meetings with Denver, a Thursday night game next week in Las Vegas against the Raiders, and a December 23rd encounter with the visiting Buffalo Bills. Los Angeles' defense is going strong behind NFL sack leader Khalil Mack, who has 15 sacks a season, all in the last 9 games. Denver saw its 5-game winning streak end last week with a 22-17 loss in Houston. The Broncos nearly erased a 16-3 deficit in the third quarter, where Russell Wilson tossed his 3rd interception with 9 seconds left to deal their playoff chances a major blow. Philadelphia Eagles, 10-2, at Dallas Cowboys, 9-3. Philadelphia Eagles, 10-2, at Dallas Cowboys, 9-3. The 0-2 record this season against teams that currently have win records, the Cowboys still have a lot to prove in-game against the Eagles in Arlington, Texas. It will be the 130th meeting in the 63-year rivalry, and the stakes could not be higher. Dallas is flying high on a 4-game winning streak, while Philadelphia comes to Kansas trying to shake off an ugly 23-point loss to San Francisco. The Eagles are clinging to a 1-game lead over the Cowboys in the NFC East and in the race for the number 1 overall seed in the NFC playoffs. The 49ers and the Lions are also 9-3. Philadelphia won the first meeting as Dallas 28-23 at home in Week 9. The Eagles also won the signature of free against agent linebacker Shaquille Leonard, who agreed to terms with Philadelphia this week after meeting with both teams. Sunday is also a primetime opportunity for quarterbacks Dak Prescott of the Cowboys and Jalen Hurts of the Eagles to perhaps take the lead in the race for the NFL's Most Valuable Player honors. Tennessee Titans, 4-8, at Miami Dolphins, 9-3. Tennessee has 2 wins since October 1st, and the Dolphins have 2 losses in the same span. The Titans have 7 losses in which they scored 16 points or fewer. Miami has a 70-point outing and has put up less than 17 points once in 12 games. The Titans have 20 offensive touchdowns in 2023. The Dolphins have 22 rushing touchdowns and 25 passing touchdowns. The Titans have a healthy Derrick Henry, which gives them a chance to execute a ball possession plan to limit Miami's offensive opportunities. Henry was over 100 yards with 2 touchdowns last week when he was sent to the locker room and didn't return. Henry says he's ready to roll for Monday's visit against Miami. The Dolphins have won 3 in a row with 99 total points and having a firm grip on the AFC East. Green Bay Packers, 6-6, at New York Giants, 4-8. Tommy DeVito kept the starting QB job, even with Tyrod Taylor returning from a rib injury after leading back-to-back wins to give the Giants a reasonable chance to finish with a winning record. New York's offense isn't a big play machine, relying instead on running back Saquon Barkley, 865 yards of scrimmage, and a collection of wide receivers without elite options since losing tight end Darren Waller to a hamstring injury last month. The Packers are a different story. The Packers are a different story with Jordan Love coming up clutch to win three consecutive games, steering Green Bay Packers into the playoff picture. Green Bay's third down offense, 44% convergence, and the emergence of rookie wide receiver Jaden Reed, one of the Packers' three wide receivers with five or more touchdowns, has helped cover in the absence of injured running back Aaron Jones. The Packers last allowed more than 24 points on September 28th at Detroit. The Giants have scored more than 17 points once, 31 at Washington on November 19th, September 17th. 75 teams descend on Mid-America Center for Council Bluffs Wrestling Classic. From Council Bluffs in the Omaha Metro to Kansas, South Dakota, and Missouri, 75 teams come to the Mid-America Center Friday and Saturday for the Council Bluffs Wrestling Classic. Wrestlers take to the mat at noon on Friday. This story will be up as up-to-date possible in print for the non-perilous Friday deadline. Thank you. Kaori Sakamoto dazzles in the Grand Prix Final to take lead in women's free skate in Beijing. Two-time world champion Kaori Sakamoto was nearly flawless during her short program at the Grand Prix Final on Friday, taking a comfortable lead over Belgium's Loena Hendricks and Nina Pinazzorai into the free skate. Sakamoto, trying to make it back-to-back titles for Japan after Mai Mihara's title last year, opened with an effortless double axel before landing a triple lutz and a triple flip in a loop. She also received her usual high marks for artistry, and the result was a score of 77.35 points, the best short program of her season. "I want to answer the expectations of those around me and my own expectations as well," said Sakamoto, and failed to medal on her two previous appearances at the capstone event to the Grand Prix season. "I was able to do well in the short program in the previous GP final. The real competition starts from here. I think I have to win against myself." Hendricks, the reigning Grand Prix Final bronze medalist, turned out on triple flip, was solid on her double axel and triple lutz, triple toe loop to score 73.25 points for the second. 17-year-old Pinazzorai was surprising third with 66.72 points. "It's amazing to have two Belgian women here in the final," Hendricks said. In the pairs competition, Minerva Fabian Haas and Nikita Volden of Germany barely held off Italy's Sarah Conti and Nicola Massi and the duo of Deanna Stadolato Dudek and Maxime Deschamps to win the gold medal. In the rhythm dance, where several teams struggled with their Twizzlers, the American team of Madison Chalk and Evan Bates had no trouble. The reigning world champions and four-time Grand Prix final silver medalists scored 89.15 points to lead Italian of Charlene Gounard and Marco Fabri and the Canadian duo Piper Gills and Paul Poirier. The competition concludes Saturday with the men's and women's free skates and the free dance. It was a disappointing night for Isabella Levito, the 16-year-old American, who was hoping to climb to the top step of the podium after a second-place finish out a year ago. The reigning U.S. champion received no points for opening double lutz, took a step on a double axel, and was shaky on a triple flip double toe loop to score 56.53 points and finish 6th of 6. "It was just a bad skate, I guess," the tearful Levito said afterward. "I'm a little bit sick right now, but in general, nothing is really wrong. Tomorrow's another day, and we'll see how that goes." The highlight of the day at National Indoor Stadium in Beijing may have to come in the Junior Grand Prix Final when Mao Shimada became the 14th woman to land a clean quad internationally with her toe loop early in her free skate. The 15-year-old from Japan also landed a triple axel, finished with 206.33 points, which would have been good for second in last year's senior event. "In the short program, I made a mistake, and so today I was very nervous for the free skate," said Shimada, also won the title last year before the competition. "I was able to get my nerves under control and perform well," she said. The pairs competition, where Haas and Volodin were in first place after their short program, wound up being the tightest in recent memory. The three teams on the podium were separated by just 2.13 points. "I'm just overwhelmed and surprised," said Haas, who along with Volodin finished with 206.43 points. "It was super hard today, and we both had to fight through this program. It's even nice that this was awarded the gold medal in the end." McCarthy back to work. Business as usual for the Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy returned to work and expects no limitations following surgery Wednesday for acute appendicitis. Defensive coordinator Dan Quinn ran meetings and filled the typical duties of McCarthy while he was hospitalized. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Non-Perio for December 8th, 2023. The Non-Perio can be heard each weekday at 5 p.m. I'm Zachariah Osmond from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to ncpc.org/seniors. That's ncpc.org/seniors. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, at high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active-duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest, but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.